Tonight's story is the second in our series for UFO Month. As an added bonus, I recorded a more casual bonus episode with Dr. Cogswell over at the Mad Scientist podcast. So we talked about aliens and some of the thoughts we had on our recent cases that we've looked at for our respective shows. It just so happens Dr. Cogs did an excellent series on the Betty and Barney Hill case recently, and it happened to come out around the same time our Travis Walton episode came out. Anyway, if you haven't already, go check out all the fun over at the Mad Scientist podcast, including the bonus episode Chris and I did. Not only was it a lot of fun and great to catch up, it also fits right in line with UFO Month that we're doing over here. All that said, tonight's episode is not an abduction case, and frankly, I'm not entirely sure it's a UFO case, but I did want to show a lot of variety in the UFO spectrum for those of you that may be new to these type of cases, and it's a fun reminder for those more experienced listeners out there. Tonight, we're going to take a look at a case that Congressman Leland Ford from California wanted to know was either a, quote, practice raid or a raid to throw scare into 2 million people, or a mistaken identity raid, or a raid to take away Southern California's war industries. You see, the term UFO doesn't always have to mean alien, just unidentified. No matter what the object was or wasn't, the Battle of Los Angeles was more than just a bad Hollywood movie for those that remember the events in 1942. Tonight, we'll take a look at some of the aspects of the case and see if we can learn a little bit more about the Great Los Angeles Raid of 1942.
What's the podcast?
Find me a podcast.
You're listening to my dad.
My dad shows the best.
It was February 25th, 1942, just a couple months after the devastating Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Tensions across the U.S. were high, and even more so on the west coast of the country, closest to our newest enemy of a war we as a country just got into. So when the military started picking up potential targets west of Los Angeles around 2:15 a.m., or 0215, according to militarymuseum.org, where I got this timeline from, stations were put on green alert, which meant they were live and ready to shoot any unknown targets approaching the western coast of the United States. 5 to 10 minutes later, a blackout was ordered for the city in order to hide potential targets and more easily identify potential bogeys. From here on out, it gets a little bit murky, depending on which report you read and who wrote the report. There were scattered reports of planes and varying balloon-type aircrafts floating around the area, with some reports claiming up to 25 planes over Los Angeles. Regardless, the AAF never launched defensive planes due to the conflicting reports and, quite frankly, the lack of resources. Basically, they weren't sure what was out there and where it was coming from and couldn't afford to send the planes off chasing red herrings. While nothing officially could be confirmed, something did trigger one of the anti-aircraft units to start firing their 12-pound artillery shells and simultaneously shining the ultra-bright searchlights into the air. This also led to the now infamous picture of all the spotlights converging into one area of the sky that most people who have at least heard of this case are likely familiar with, but we'll get into that in 1 second. This chaos, for lack of a better term, lasted until just after 4 a.m., yet resulted in no downed aircraft and no return fire from said enemies. That isn't to say there were no injuries. 3 direct civilian deaths and at least 3 confirmed heart attacks can be contributed to this event, as well as significant damage to cars, houses, buildings, you name it. Pretty much what you would think of when you have almost 1,500 12-pound rounds fired off into the air in the middle of the night. So, what the hell happened that would cause such a reaction? One of the strangest parts of this story is actually the lack of consistency, even in the official story. The Secretary of the Navy, Frank Knox, claimed the event was just a false alarm and jittery nerves. And initially, this would be my gut feeling as well, given the time frame and historical context. But wait, there's more. Army Chief of Staff George Marshall sent a memo to President Roosevelt regarding the event. In this memo, he concluded, quote, "Investigation continuing. It seems reasonable to conclude that if unidentified airplanes were involved, they may have been from commercial sources operated by enemy agents for purposes of spreading alarm, disclosing location of anti-aircraft positions, and slowing production through blackout. Such conclusion is supported by varying speed of operation and the fact that no bombs were dropped," end quote. Granted, there's quite a bit of speculation in the above statement with the ifs and may have been. However, I found the difference in overall tone from the two departments to be interesting and slightly unnerving. This isn't to say there can't be differing points of view, but the inconsistency always fuels the fake news fire of the time and makes for not only inconsistent reporting, but also overall uneasiness from the regular citizens. The surprise attack on Pearl Harbor 3 months prior, on December 7th, 1941, raised people's anxiety and had people, especially on the West Coast, more on edge. So the fear and anxiety that people were feeling prior to the event, it wasn't completely unfounded. I, for one, never knew that only 2 days prior to the Battle of Los Angeles, a Japanese sub attacked an oil field near Santa Barbara. No one was injured in this attack, but it still was an event that heightened the tensions for the West Coast Military Command. This is also the start of some of the theories behind the air raid, with speculation being that the raid was a deliberate false alarm to draw attention away from the Japanese being able to successfully attack U.S. mainland soil. Of course, this is just one of the theories put forward. We'll take a look at some of the others I came across right after the break. Tonight's sponsor will not come as any sort of surprise to people that have listened to Season 1 of Pints and Puzzles. For those of you who are new to us, first of all, welcome aboard, and second, you'll quickly get used to hearing me talk about our permanent partner sponsor, Fulton for Life. Full transparency, Fulton for Life is the brainchild of my amazingly talented wife.
That's Mommy.
Who originally designed the Lizzie Tisch bag for her use as a working mom. This bag is not only practical with zippers and compartments to hide all your personal items during a work meeting, but it's also stylish and classy, with a look that'll get people talking about your new bag. Don't believe me? Go check out fultonforlife.com and check out the bag for yourself. While you're there, you can also check out the other offerings Fulton for Life has, and you can use my special promo code PINTS at checkout for 10% off your order. Once again, support your favorite podcast
and my mom
by going to fultonforlife.com and using promo code PINTS. Probably the most popular theory, and the one that puts the Battle of Los Angeles on most people's radar, is that it was an alien ship that was being fired upon. Part of this speculation was from the Hollywood movie with the same title that I freely admit I haven't seen and quite frankly have no desire to see. The other part is from different analysis, quote-unquote, of the now famous photograph that shows the searchlights converging into one point of the sky. There is an enhanced version of this picture that does look like something is in the middle of the searchlights. Different sources have their theories as to why this is, from how the newspapers printed photos at the time, all the way to deliberate manipulation on both sides of the spectrum. LA Times writer Larry Harnish theorizes that most of what comes across as proof in this case was actually done as promotional materials for the movie. Now, the one UFO angle that I came across that did make a little bit of logical sense actually wasn't alien, but rather a blimp that drifted into the airspace. If the blimp was essentially popped by the artillery fire, it could have easily drifted out over the ocean before coming down, thus no evidence and no crashed ship. This would explain the lack of debris, lack of return fire, and even some reports year later that the event was due to a rogue weather balloon. Always a weather balloon, right? Looking at the more terrestrial alternate theories of the events, one of the more popular is that the Los Angeles air raid was triggered as a warning to move some of the military factories and such more inland as they were easy targets out on the coast. Coming off the heels of the oil field attack a few days earlier, This is definitely a plausible theory. I mean, it's certainly more believable than Japanese planes being launched from a secret base in Mexico, also a theory, or even submarine aircraft carriers. Officially, after the war, the Japanese said they did not launch any planes over Los Angeles the night in question. But there was talk of a submarine-based aircraft carrier, which was more than just a theory. The Japanese did, in fact, have a class of submarines called the I-400 class submarine, and these ships were designed to be able to make one round trip anywhere in the world, and of course, launch up to two planes. Each of these planes would either have a torpedo or a standard bomb attached to them. These subs were also slated to be used in a secret Japanese attack called Operation Cherry Blossoms at Night, in which the planes would be carrying bombs filled with plague-infested fleas, which would in turn be dropped over military bases on the West Coast. Luckily, this particular plan was scheduled for September of 1945, which was a month after the Japanese surrendered in World War II. I know it was a mini history lesson there, but hey, sometimes you come across interesting tidbits that just have to be shared. Oh, that flea attack? Yeah, that was orchestrated by Shiro Ishii of Unit 731 Infamy. Reeling it back in some, the submarines did have issues with stability, dive depth, a huge radar profile, and overall size issues. I mean, who can relate, am I right? The catch here was that these submarines didn't make it into production until 1943, but it was still within the realm of possibilities and not as unrealistic as it sounds, at least on the surface. As with most of these stories that have a more historical undertone, this is definitely a tougher case for me to get my arms around. I would love to believe there is some kind of alien ship checking us out that was fired on and mysteriously vanished into nowhere. However, the historical context weighs really heavily on my take on this. The Pearl Harbor attack was still very fresh in everyone's mind, and remember, this was a surprise attack, at least officially, and had a really high fatality rate. Add to that the attack on the oil field a couple days before, and you have a recipe for a powder keg that's just waiting to go off. Now, the part of my brain behind the tinfoil curtain wants to think that this may have been used as an extra incentive for the military to move their operations or to increase their operations, and we definitely can get into some of the conspiracies around Pearl Harbor as a whole, and who knew what when on a whole nother episode. My gut feeling in this case, though, is that it was not an organized event by any means, and really was likely due to jittery nerves. And I think that'll do it for the Battle of Los Angeles, or the Great LA Air Raid, as well as Episode 2 of UFO Month. Like I said in the beginning, there's a different take on the UFO theme, but definitely important to show range in this field. If you want a really another awesome telling of the Battle of Los Angeles, check out my Texas friends over at the Secret Transmission Podcast. I hope everyone is enjoying UFO Month so far and my attempts at weekly drops here, as I don't typically cover the spooky type of things that most podcasts are covering this time of year. This is as close as I get, so a little bit of a twist on the paranormal spookness for the month of October. However, the weekly drops do require some MacGyvering on occasion from my part, so I hope tonight's episode sounds okay, as I'm not in my usual studio. I'm actually built a blanket fort in the back of my minivan, so feel free to check Twitter out if you want to see pictures of that. It's definitely quite creative. But I do have a great assistant producer here with me tonight. What's your name, producer?
Jack.
Who has been helping me out here and there, as well as being very quiet in the back while I'm trying to record this. So I appreciate that. Last but not least, I want to give a special shout out to my pod friends. Somehow they found my Patreon group and were really great enough to make a donation to it. So, as such, thank you to Melissa and Mandy with the Moms and Murder podcast. Javier with Pretend Radio. And of course, DJ Sammy Sam, had to do it, and Jason over at the Not Alone podcast. Thank you all for not only being great friends, but also for supporting the show and making that nice gesture. I really appreciate it more than you guys know. Now, I don't actively promote my Patreon yet at this point, but I will put a link in the show notes if Patreon is your thing and you want to check it out. We'll be back next week with another story for UFO Month. But in the meantime, feel free to connect with me on Twitter at Pints and Puzzles or email at pintsandpuzzlespod@gmail.com. Our beer review is coming up right after a couple of quick promos from some amazing friends of mine.
This is Pints and Puzzles.
I'd like to introduce you to a documentary-style podcast about real people pretending to be someone else. It's called Pretend Radio. It's about con artists, false prophets, and real people who are living a lie, like this man, who worked as an FBI undercover agent for 27 years.
So what I had to do was a cold approach, which is in undercover cases is the most difficult. So Mahmoud looks at me, but he's still glaring. And he barks some orders in Arabic. So I'm thinking to myself, did Mahmoud just tell him, you know, get the Uzis and pull the van up by the back door?
And we learn how one man went from being a small-time street thug to running a multi-million-dollar medical scam.
He goes, you know the doctor went to jail, right? And I was like, the doctor went to jail? I was like, no, I didn't know that. Why would he go to jail? He said, yeah, man. I called my lawyer and I tell him, hey, man, look, I think I got a little problem. He says, what happened? I said, I talked to this guy. He said, the doctor went to jail. I'm pretty sure that if the doctor went to jail, they're going to probably be looking for me as well.
If you like what you heard, subscribe now to Pretend Radio. And follow us on Twitter, pretend_radio. Remember, fake it till you make it.
Testing. My name is Toby, and I'm the host of the Secret Transmission Podcast. We are a show that discusses the paranormal, conspiracies, the supernatural, UFOs, cryptozoology, and anything else weird. Our show is transmitted to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. You can also follow us on Twitter for updates, @SecretTransPod. So get ready to put on your tinfoil hats and come learn with us as we try to explain the unexplainable.
Tonight's beer review is the Sequench Ale from Dogfish Head Brewery. This is a 4.9% ABV session sour, which has just a hint of sour, a little bit of lime, and a touch of sea salt. The website officially says a, quote, session sour mashup of a crisp Kolsch, salty Ghost, and a tart Berliner Weiss, brewed in sequence with black lime, sour lime juice, and sea salt. It's not super sour by any means, more of a tart lime than a sour beer, if that makes sense. It's really light and refreshing, and it was even named the best low-cal beer of 2017 by Men's Health magazine. Look at that. Beer's good for you. Go figure. Be safe, everyone, drink responsibly, and have a great evening.
That was pretty awesome. That was totes amazing. Wowers. That's really great.